I am in some degree insane. It could be argued that it was the most harrowing of my life. I had lied often to Master Gerlows and Master Palamon, to Master Malrubius while he still lived, to Drott because he was captain, to Roach because he was older and stronger than I, and to Eta and the other smaller apprentices because I hoped to make them respect me. Now I could no longer be sure my own mind was not lying to me. All my falsehoods were recoiling on me, and I, who remembered everything, could not be certain those memories were more than my own dreams. I recalled the moonlit face of Vodalus, but then I had wanted to see it. I recalled his voice as he spoke to me, but I had desired to hear it, and the woman's voice too. One freezing night I crept back to the mausoleum and took out the chrysos again. The worn, serene, androgynous face on its obverse was not the face of Vodalus. Chapter 4. Triskele. I had been poking a stick up a frozen drain as punishment for some petty infraction, and I found him where the keepers of the bear tower throw their refuse, the bodies of the torn animals killed in practice. Our guild buries its own dead beside the wall, and our clients in the lower reaches of the necropolis, but the keepers of the bear tower leave theirs to be taken away by others. He was the smallest of those dead. There are encounters that change nothing. Urth turns her aged face to the sun, and he beams upon her snows. They scintillate and coruscate until each little point of ice hanging from the swelling sides of the towers seems the claw of the conciliator, the most precious of gems. Then everyone except the wisest believes that the snow must melt and give way to a protracted summer beyond summer. Nothing of the sort occurs. The paradise endures for a watch or two, then shadows blue as watered milk lengthen on the snow, which shifts and dances under the spur of an east wind. Night comes and all is as it was. My finding Triskele was like that. I felt that it could have, and should have, changed everything, but it was only the episode of a few months, and when it was over and he was gone, it was only another winter passed, and the feast of Holy Catherine come again, and nothing had changed. I wish I could tell you how pitiful he looked when I touched him, and how cheerful. He lay on his side, covered with blood. It was as hard as tar in the cold, and still bright red, because the cold had preserved it. I went over and put my hand on his head. I don't know why. He seemed as dead as the rest, but he opened one eye then and rolled it at me, and there was a confidence in it that the worst was over now. I have carried my part, it seemed to say, and borne up, and done all I could do. Now it is your turn to do your duty by me. If it had been summer, I think I would have let him die. As it was, I had not seen a living animal, not so much as a garbage-eating thalacodon, in some time. I stroked him again, and he licked my hand, and I could not turn away after that. I picked him up, surprised at how heavy he was, and looked about, trying to decide what to do with him. He would be discovered in our dormitory before the candle had burned a finger's width, I knew. The citadel is immense and immensely complicated, with little visited rooms and passages in its towers, in the buildings that have been erected between the towers and in the galleries delved under them. Yet I could not think of any such place that I could reach without being seen half a dozen times on the way, and in the end I carried the poor brute into the quarters of our own guild. I then had to get him past the journeyman who stood guard at the head of the stair leading to the cell tiers. My first idea was to put him in the basket in which we took down the client's clean bedding. It was a laundry day, and it would have been easy enough to make one more trip than was actually required. The chance that the journeyman guard would notice anything amiss seemed remote, but it would have involved waiting more than a watch for the scrubbed linen to dry and risking the questions of the brother on duty in the third tier, who would see me descending to the deserted fourth. Instead, I laid the dog in the examination room. He was too weak to move, and offered to take the guard's place at the head of the ramp. He was happy enough to seize the opportunity to relieve himself, and handed over his wide-bladed carnificial sword, which I, in theory, was not supposed to touch, and his fullagen cloak, which I was forbidden to wear, though I was already taller than most of the journeymen, so that from a distance it would appear that there had been no substitution. I put on the cloak, and as soon as he was gone, stood the sword in a corner and got my dog. All our guild cloaks are voluminous, and this one was more so than most, since the brother I had replaced was large of frame. Furthermore, the hue fullagen, which is darker than black, admirably erases all folds, bunchings, and gatherings so far as the eye is concerned, showing only a featureless dark. With the hood pulled up, I must have appeared to the journeymen at their tables in the tiers, if they looked toward the stair and saw me at all, as a brother somewhat more portly than most, descending to the lower levels. Even the man on duty in the third, where the clients who had lost all reason howled and shook their chains, could have seen nothing unusual in another journeyman going down to the fourth when there were rumors that it was to be refurbished, or in an apprentice running down shortly after the journeyman went up again. No doubt he had forgotten something there, and the apprentice had been sent to fetch it. It was not a prepossessing place. About half of the old lights still burned, but mud had seeped into the corridors until it lay to the thickness of one's hand. A duty table stood where it had been left perhaps 200 years before. The wood had rotted, and the whole thing fell at a touch. Yet the water had never been high here, and the farther end of the corridor I chose was free even of the mud. I laid my dog on a client's bed and cleaned him as well as I could with sponges I had carried down from the examination room. Under the crusted blood, his fur was short, stiff, and tawny. His tail had been cut so short that what remained was wider than it was long. His ears had been cut almost completely away, leaving only stiff points shorter than the first joint of my thumb. In his last fight, his chest had been laid open. I could see the wide muscles like drowsy constrictors of pale red. His right foreleg was gone, the upper half crushed to a pulp. I cut it away after I had sutured up his chest as well as I could, and it began to bleed again. I found the artery and tied it, then folded the skin under, as Master Palamon had taught us, to make a neat stump. Triskele licked my hand from time to time as I worked, and when I had made the last stitch, began slowly licking that, as if he were a bear and could lick a new leg into shape. His jaws were as big as an arctother's, and his canines as long as my index finger. But his gums were white. There was no more strength in those jaws now than in a skeleton's hands. His eyes were yellow and held a certain clean madness. That evening I traded tasks with a boy who was to bring the clients their meals. There were always extra trays because some clients would not eat, and now I carried two of these down to Triskele, wondering if he was still alive. He was. He had somehow climbed out of the bed where I had laid him and crawled, he could not stand, to the edge of the mud where a little water had gathered. That was where I found him. There was soup and dark bread and two carafes of water. He drank one bowl of soup, but when I tried to feed him the bread, I found he could not chew it enough to swallow. I soaked it in the other bowl of soup for him, then filled the bowl again and again with water until both carafes were empty. When I lay on my cot almost at the top of our tower, I thought I could hear his labored breathing. Several times I sat up listening. Each time the sound faded away, only to return when I had lain flat for a time. Perhaps it was only the beating of my heart. If I had found him a year, 2 years before, he would have been a divinity to me. I would have told Drott and the rest, and he would have been a divinity to us all. Now I knew him for the poor animal he was. And yet I could not let him die, because it would have been a breaking of faith with something in myself. I had been a man, if I was truly a man, such a short time. I could not endure to think that I had become a man so different from the boy I had been. I could remember each moment of my past, every vagrant thought and sight, every dream. How could I destroy that past? I held up my hands and tried to look at them. I knew the veins stood out on their backs now. It is when those veins stand out that one is a man. In a dream, I walked through the fourth level again and found a huge friend there with dripping jaws. It spoke to me. Next morning, I served the clients again and stole food to take down to the dog, though I hoped that he was dead. He was not. He lifted his muzzle and seemed to grin at me with a mouth so wide it appeared his head might fall in two halves, though he did not try to stand. I fed him, and as I was about to leave, was struck by the misery of his condition. He was dependent on me. Me. He had been valued. Trainers had coached him as runners are coached for a race. He had walked in pride, his enormous chest as wide as a man's, set on two legs like pillars. Now he lived like a ghost. His very name had been washed away in his own blood. When I had time, I visited the Bear Tower and struck up such friendships as I could with the beast handlers there. They have their own guild, and though it is a lesser guild than ours, it has much strange lore. To a degree, that astonished me. I found it to be the same lore, though I did not, of course, penetrate to their arcanum. In the elevation of their masters, the candidate stands under a metal grate trod by a bleeding bull. At some point in life, each brother takes a lioness or bear sow in marriage, after which he shuns human women. All of which is only to say that there exists between them and the animals they bring to the pits a bond much like that between our clients and ourselves. Now I have traveled much farther from our tower, but I have found always that the pattern of our guild is repeated mindlessly, like the repetitions of Father Inri's mirrors in the House Absolute, in the societies of every trade, so that they are all of them torturers, just as we. His quarry stands to the hunter as our clients to us. Those who buy to the tradesmen, the enemies of the Commonwealth to the soldier, the governed to the governors, men to women. All love that which they destroy. A week after I had carried him down, I found only Triskele's hobbling footprints in the mud. He was gone. But I set out after him, sure that one of the journeymen would have mentioned it to me if he had come up the ramp. Soon the footprints led to a narrow door that opened on a welter of lightless corridors of whose existence I had been utterly unaware. In the dark, I could no longer track him, but I pressed on nevertheless, thinking that he might catch my scent in the stale air and come to me. Soon I was lost, and went forward only because I did not know how to go back. I have no way of knowing how old those tunnels are. I suspect, though I can hardly say why, that they antedate the citadel above them, ancient though it is. It comes to us from the very end of the age when the urge to flight, the outward urge that sought new suns not ours, remained, though the means to achieve that flight were sinking like dying fires. Remote as that time is, from which hardly one name is recalled, we still remember it. Before it, there must have been another time, a time of burrowing, of the creation of dark galleries, that is now utterly forgotten. However that may be, I was frightened there. I ran, and sometimes ran into walls, until at last I saw a spot of pale daylight and clambered out through a hole hardly big enough for my head and shoulders. I found myself crawling onto the ice-covered pedestal of one of those old faceted dials whose multitudinous faces give each a different time. No doubt because the frost of these latter ages entering the tunnel below had heaved its foundation, it had slipped sidewise until it stood at such an angle that it might have been one of its own gnomons drawing the silent passage of the short winter day across the unmarked snow. The space about it had been a garden in summer, but not such a one as our necropolis, with half-wild trees and rolling meadowed lawns. Roses had blossomed here, and craters set upon a tessellated pavement. Statues of beasts stood with their backs to the four walls of the court, eyes turned to watch the canted dial. Hulking Berlendes, Arctothers, the monarchs of bears, Glyptodons, Smilodons with fangs like glaives, all were dusted now with snow. I looked for Triskele's tracks, but he had not come here. The walls of the court held high, narrow windows. I could see no light through them and no motion. The spear towers of the citadel rose on every side, so that I knew I had not left it. Instead, I seemed to be somewhere near its heart, where I had never been. Shaking with cold, I crossed to the nearest door and pounded on it. I had the feeling that I might wander forever in the tunnels below without ever finding another way to the surface, and I was resolved to smash one of the windows if need be, rather than return that way. There was no sound within, though I beat my fist against the door panels again and again. There is really no describing the sensation of being watched. I have heard it called a prickling at the back of the neck, and even a consciousness of eyes that seem to float in darkness. But it is neither, at least not for me. It is something akin to a sourceless embarrassment, coupled with the feeling that I must not turn around, because to turn will be to appear a fool, answering the promptings of baseless intuition. Eventually, of course, one does. I turned with a vague impression that someone had followed me through the hole at the base of the dial. Instead, I saw a young woman, wrapped in furs, standing before a door at the opposite side of the court. I waved to her and began to walk toward her, hurriedly, because I was so cold. She advanced toward me then, and we met on the farther side of the dial. She asked who I was and what I was doing there, and I told her as well as I could. The face, circled by her fur hood, was exquisitely molded, and the hood itself and her coat and fur-trimmed boots were soft-looking and rich, so that I was miserably conscious, as I spoke to her, of my own patched shirt and trousers and my muddy feet. Her name was Valeria. "We do not have your dog here," she said. "You may search if you do not believe me." "I never thought you did. I only want to go back where I belong, to the Matagin Tower, without having to go down there again." "You're very brave. I have seen that hole since I was a little girl, but I never dared to go in."
"I'd like to go in," I said. "I mean inside there."
She opened the door through which she had come and led me into a tapestried room where stiff ancient chairs seemed as fixed in their places as the statues in the frozen court. A diminutive fire smoked in a grate against one wall. We went to it, and she took off her coat while I spread my hands to the warmth.
"Wasn't it cold in the tunnels?"
"Not as cold as outside. Besides, I was running and there was no wind."
"I see. How strange that they should come up in the atrium of time."
She looked younger than I, but there was an antique quality about her metal-trimmed dress and the shadow of her dark hair that made her seem older than Master Palamon,
a dweller in forgotten yesterdays. Is that what you call it? The atrium of time? Because of the dials, I suppose. No, the dials were put there because we call it that. Do you like the dead languages? They have mottos. Lux Dei Vitae Vium Monstrat. That's the beam of the new sun lights the way of life. Felicibus brevis, miseris hora longa. Men wait long for happiness. Aspice ut aspicia.
I had to tell her with some shame that I knew no tongue beyond the one we spoke, and little of that. Before I left, we talked to Sentry's watch or more. Her family occupied these towers. They had waited, at first, to leave Urth with the autarch of their era, then had waited because there was nothing left for them but waiting. They had given many castellans to the citadel, but the last had died generations ago. They were poor now, and their towers were in ruins. Valeria had never gone above the lower floors. Some of the towers were built more strongly than others, I said. The witch's keep is decayed inside, too.
Is there really such a place? My nurse told me of it when I was little, to frighten me. But I thought it was only a tale. There was supposed to be a tower of torment, too, where all who enter die in agony.
I told her that, at least, was a fable.
The great days of these towers are more fabulous to me, she said. No one of my blood carries a sword now against the enemies of the Commonwealth, or stands hostage for us at the Well of Orchids.
Perhaps one of your sisters will be summoned soon, I said, for I did not want, for some reason, to think of her going herself.
I am all the sisters we breed, she answered, and all the sons.
An old servant brought us tea and small hard cakes, not real tea, but the mate of the north, which we sometimes give our clients because it is so cheap. Valeria smiled.
You see, you have found some comfort here. You are worried about your poor dog because he is lame, but he too may have found hospitality.